News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Hey, y'all. It's Dan Brennan, Dalton Arwig on Mobile Mornings at 8:07, 7 after 8 o'clock. Disturbing news about that fire at Cotton Hall. It's basically a dolphin and broad.
It's an old orphanage, right?
And now it's been redone. It's now an event venue.
Yeah, for weddings and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And so I haven't been there. I know my wife's been to an event or two there, and that's sad news. We'll see how all that turns out. But it sounds like there was a lot of fire trucks down there trying to do what they could do to do the best to save what is there of Cotton Hall. So keep your fingers crossed. Say a prayer for that. Meanwhile, a lot to tackle here in the final hour of Mobile Mornings. Trying to think where we start. I guess we start with the storm.
Yeah, let's give an update on that. And we've been talking with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, well, for years, but we continued that this week and talked to him about...
For me, since 95.
And good news for us, good news for our area of the Gulf Coast, is it does appear that Hurricane Delta is headed for the coast of Louisiana, and that could be later tomorrow afternoon, night, into Saturday morning. According to Dr. Bill, we will still feel some effects right here in Mobile and Baldwin counties from the storm. He said expect 1 to 3 feet of storm surge, as we are still on the east side of that storm in the Gulf. We could see anywhere from 2 to possibly 3 inches of rain from Hurricane Delta. And as when the wind is blowing at its highest, he said 30 to 35 mile per hour wind gusts, and that would be tomorrow night into Saturday morning. He also said we could expect 15 to 20 mile per hour winds as the storm moves through, constant steady winds, but gusts of 30 to 35 miles an hour. So it's going to be tough if you were planning on getting out there on the water for snapper season, the one weekend of extra snapper season they gave us this weekend. Mm. But Sean talked with Alabama Marine Resources Director Scott Bannon yesterday, who said, you know, with what's going on in the Gulf right now, and since they decide on how many days you can fish for red snapper depending on the tonnage that's caught, because a lot of people, most people, won't be out fishing this weekend, they should be able to carry over that snapper season to another weekend later this year.
Good. That is good news.
But the best news is, for us anyway, that Hurricane Delta appears to be heading far westward from our area of the Gulf Coast. It's tough, though, for that coast of Louisiana, who had Hurricane Laura slam into the Lake Charles area just, what was that, a month and a half, 2 months ago?
Yeah, I think it was less than 2 months.
And 7,000 people, right around 7,000 people from Hurricane Laura are still staying in hotels, motels, other accommodations because their homes are unlivable right now. Good news for them, at least in a way. Dr. Bill said the storm will be east of that area that got slammed by Hurricane Laura, so they'll at least be on the west side of the storm, which is the least dangerous side of the storm.
Boy, yeah, that really, and we know that is good news, and so for those people, till this morning, I didn't realize there were 7,000 people still living. That's what's crazy about these hurricane stories, too. I was noticing even on this morning with Gordon Deal, the first 15 minutes of his show, I don't believe there was a mention of the hurricane. I mean, that's a major deal to the communities where it's coming. We know all about that, and yet they happen. And if they don't happen to you, sometimes you tend to kind of, you say, well, I'll get back to concerning myself with it, and then you never do.
Well, yeah, big storms like this, big hurricanes, aren't rare, even though they're very deadly. We've seen some awful things from hurricanes over the years, but because it happens all the time, I guess maybe the national media doesn't feel the need to cover it as closely. They sure talk about those wildfires in California all the time. Maybe it makes better visuals. I mean, both things are devastating, and both come from Mother Nature, but for some reason, we just don't get the coverage nationally from the hurricanes that strike here on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, they become a non-story way too quickly, I think.
I think so.
All right, so this is not a non-story. Think of a referee when a field goal goes wide left. That's kind of what President Donald Trump is doing right now, isn't he?
Yeah, so the big news today, of course, we've spent a lot of this morning talking about last night's vice presidential debate, but the news this morning from the Commission on Presidential Debates, they announced that the second and next presidential debate between President Donald Trump and Joe Biden will now be held virtually, still planning on having it on its scheduled date, which is a week from tonight on October 15th in Miami. But they said, I guess, for the health and safety of those involved and because the president and so many in the president's camp have tested positive for COVID-19 over the last week, that they're going to do a virtual debate instead. I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but I do know that the president has already spoken out about this and said he will not be involved if it's a virtual debate. He was on Fox Business this morning and talking with Maria Bartiromo, and the president said, "The commission changed the debate style, and that's not acceptable to us. I beat him in the first debate. I beat him easily." He also said he expected to beat Biden in the second debate as well. And Trump said, "I'm not going to do a virtual debate. I'm not going to waste my time at a virtual debate." Said he wouldn't sit at a computer to debate and called it ridiculous. And he added, "They're trying to protect Biden. Everybody is." Now, it looks like the Biden campaign is okay with a virtual debate next week. According to his campaign manager, Kate Bedingfield, she said, "Vice President Biden looks forward to speaking directly to the American people and comparing his plan for bringing the country together and building back better with Donald Trump's failed leadership," again, her words, "on the coronavirus that has thrown the strong economy he inherited into the worst downturn since the Great Depression." So, you know, we saw this from President Trump back in 2016 and in the Republican debates. Back then, even, they were talking about changing some rules because of Donald Trump's style in those debates. And he would say time and time again, I think even into the general election debates against Hillary Clinton, where he would say, "Yeah, I'm not coming. If you're changing the rules, I'm not going to be there." Or he would say, I dominated so hugely in the last debate that there's no need for me to get out there again. And each time he did return to debate, but none of those were virtual debates. And I could see where he's coming from here. That takes away a huge part of his style.
And I can see where Biden's coming from, too, because they said, "Mr. Biden, would you like to return to a small room with a grizzly bear, or would you rather do it a different way?" And he would say, "Yeah, if you can get the grizzly bear out of the room, I'd probably feel a little more comfortable." So I can see both sides, right?
It only helps Biden in this debate, I believe, which is why the president says it seems unfair. Now, should the president be up there debating just over a week after his COVID-19 diagnosis? I guess by October 15th, it would have been nearly 2 full weeks since his diagnosis became public. Well, according to his doctor, Sean Connolly, yesterday, he said that the president has been, as of yesterday, symptom-free for over 24 hours. And had not had a fever for the last 4 days. I don't have the CDC protocols in front of me, but I believe that from the time that you stop having symptoms, you should be free to move around and move out of the house 10 days after that. So if you're going by the CDC protocols, it would appear to be safe for at least the president. I don't know about those in the president's camp, but at least safe for him to show up to the debate in Miami next Thursday.
Yeah.
But they say
I follow you.
They're worried about the health and safety of everyone, so they're moving it to a virtual debate. And that's my question for everyone this morning, 3430106. Should the president even consider debating virtually against Joe Biden? Do you feel like this is a setup from the Commission on Presidential Debates to maybe make it a little bit easier on Joe Biden? Or is this necessary because of the president's positive COVID-19 test?
Want to go to the phones right now? We'll do that with our buddy Fireball from Bay Minette. Fireball, good morning.
Hey, guys. Y'all doing a fantastic job. How y'all doing this morning?
We're doing wonderful, buddy. How about you?
Oh, it ain't nothing to it. Just like my paycheck.
There it is, Fireball. So what you thinking about this?
Well, they need... This is rigged for the Democrats. Chris Wallace is a never-Trumper. The lady last night that was supposed to be the narrator for the debate,
Susan Page,
she had been on Biden's staff before.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get neutral commentators on these debates instead of, because she clearly let Kamala Harris have more speaking time than Pence did last night and wouldn't interrupt her when she's talking, but when Pence would start talking, she'd start interrupting him. And the same way with Chris Wallace the other night. He you could tell he was... And, of course, you see him on Sunday mornings on the news. He's a never-Trumper. And most of these media are Democrats.
Well,
they don't care nothing about Trump.
Fireball, tell me your opinion on this. I felt that even though, as you mentioned there, Susan Page was an intern with Biden, but I felt that she was less slanted last night than Chris Wallace was in the first debate.
Well, yeah, maybe so, but she's still
slanted.
Did you notice where she wouldn't interrupt Kamala Harris as much as she did Pence?
Right, and I didn't have a stopwatch out to count how much time each were getting, and she did tell Pence a lot more times that his answer time was over, but I felt like that was his experience in this kind of setting
to talk. I think he knew exactly what he was doing, and there should be like a timer on the screen or a big scoreboard behind him or something like that, right?
I understand that, but did you notice that every time he would make a remark that she would give Harris a chance to rebuke that, and some of Harris's remarks, she wouldn't give Pence a chance to rebuke what Harris was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was on and off throughout the debate. Who did you feel won last night, regardless of who got the most speaking time? Who do you think came away from that debate with the W?
I really think Pence did, because he's more informed than Kamala Harris is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know she's a senator.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right.
Politics and some of the stuff that she was saying about what she did in California. Well, the people in California are aliens. They have no idea what the true world is about. And the politicians in California, they do not stand up for the people of California. I don't believe. That's my opinion.
Hey, good call, Fireball.
Let Fireball be the moderator of the next debate.
Thanks for the call, Fireball.
Right, thanks a lot here.
You got it, buddy. We got some other callers on the line. James from Mobile, we'll get to him here real soon. Let's just keep this discussion going. You know, last night's debate and the president opting out on the virtual debate, at least right now, he's reactionary. Maybe he's going to change his mind. All on the way. FM Talk 106.5. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. We are 18 minutes after 8 o'clock right now. Thanks for listening.
823 FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Coming to the phones here in just a minute, 343-0106. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and his crew with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Local franchise, locally owned, and they do great work here in Mobile County and in Baldwin County. And what I love about 1-800-GOT-JUNK is just the ease and the accessibility of either getting someone on the line to set up an appointment or getting online yourself at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com and setting up an appointment to have them come and take the junk that it's either too heavy for you to remove, too much junk for you to even think about starting your day and spending hours out there removing said junk. Maybe you're like me, and every now and then you get into a room in your house or you take a step out into your property and you say, what am I doing with all of this stuff that I never use? I have no use for it, and I really don't feel like setting a whole weekend aside to work on this. Well, just give Trey and the crew at 1-800-GOT-JUNK a call. It's right there in the name, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or go to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Set up your appointment. They will arrive when you expect them to arrive. They also dispose of the junk responsibly. Even if there's stuff that looks to be donatable, they will take that and donate it to people that are in need. So give them a call today, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
824 FM Talk 106.5. Breitbart News. Matt Boyle was a guest on the Jeff Poor Show yesterday. We're talking about the election here and a path to Trump winning the election. This guy's very analytical, and he kind of broke that down. Listen,
here's how the president wins re-election, right? So you get 270 electoral votes. The way I would break that down is into four tiers of states. So the first tier I have in there is our red states. So that includes, by the way, Georgia, Texas, and Arizona, which are three red states the Democrats are contesting. But if you put together all the other red states in those three, then President Trump would have 191 electoral votes. That's tier one. Now, if you go through tier one in the polling, it looks like Georgia has settled itself down and is going to vote for President Trump. It looks like Texas has done the same. Arizona's coming back around. There's a lot of polls that keep signaling that the president seems to be stabilizing there, but it's still hanging out there, and the Democrats are still fighting it pretty hard. But that being said, assuming he can get that figured out in Arizona, he'd be Tier 1 would get him to 191 electoral votes.
If you want to hear the entire conversation, check out the podcast of Jeff's show at fmtalk1065.com. He was really good, and Jeff had a really good show with a lot of great guests yesterday. So the podcasts are always there for you.
Yeah, you can always pick them up, fmtalk1065.com.
Opening up the phone lines and turning up your voice, we've got James in Mobile at 826 on FM Talk 106.5. Good morning, James.
Good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
We're doing great.
Please bear with me a minute. I want to touch on a few things with the conversation yesterday with the debate and some of the information they were putting out there. First off, the first question allowed Ms. Pamela Harris to kind of rant.
Yeah, about COVID-19.
And then she got Pence was sitting there, and they the question, which I think they should set it up that each person gets to respond to that one question, which was not happening. She gave her the chance to answer, then gave him a different one. He wanted to respond to what she said. She actually had two chances to talk at the beginning. All right, now here we go. The economy. Am I incorrect in believing the economy was doing great until the coronavirus? Am I incorrect on that?
No, you're spot on.
You're right.
Okay. I mean, why is that not being recognized? Even if I was Pence, I would have brought that up. But my personal opinion is Pence did better. He showed better etiquette. He's knowledgeable about what's been happening with Donald Trump and the Republican Party in the economy. Here we are. He didn't even bring up, which I thought was kind of one way or the other, about Biden's son.
Yeah, he did not bring that into the conversation.
China, you know, let's face it, I would be extremely not negotiable with China in anything, especially with this right here, because one of the biggest places that got targeted was the United States.
Yeah, and real quickly,
this
James.
James. They mentioned about, you know, he didn't act quick enough on the airports.
Okay, James, thanks for the call. Thanks for your thoughts.
Well, yeah, he brought me into something that I wanted to talk about, and that's with the China question last night. And, you know, I thought that Pence was very direct in saying, and he did. I know James was asking if he mentioned the economy pre-coronavirus, and he certainly did that last night.
Yeah, I heard him talking about that.
They started talking about trade with China, and Kamala's dig at the Trump administration was that they had lost the trade war with China. And Pence came back and said, you guys never even, you know, started any kind of conversation with China about trade. So don't come to us talking about who won or lost a trade war. And as far as I know, it's still ongoing. But he said directly that China is the cause of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And he also said that he felt that the Trump administration saved a lot of Americans from deaths. But a very crazy story last night, and I need to see this sourced even further than I have, but somebody who was watching actual Chinese state media, who was airing the debate last night, said that when they asked Pence about the relationship between China and the United States, that answer was taken off the air from the Chinese airwaves, from the state-run media.
Really?
When Kamala Harris came on to discuss the China-U.S. relationship, they aired that portion of the debate. If that's true, and I saw multiple people talking about this last night. Again, there's a chance it might be untrue. I'm going to look into it further today. But if that's true, that shows you what you need to know about the relationships for each side of the aisle right now and how they truly feel about China, and more importantly, how China feels about them. It appears that China does not want their people to hear what the Republicans think about the relationship. They're fine airing Kamala Harris's answer.
And bottom line, too, China doesn't want their people to hear what they don't want their people to hear. For whatever reason, China, you know, they throw on 30 seconds of Woody Woodpecker while Pence is trying to give his opinion. Crazy. It's 8:30, FM Talk 106.5. I'm going to chat with Rob Hulbert from Lanya on the way.
Thirty-six FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Let's talk with Louie Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louie. Let's try it again. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
There he is. Everyone is interested, Louie. You know, we're still in the first week
of... I think we've got a bad connection.
Oh, okay. Well, now can you hear me? No? No, we're still having trouble with Louie. Can you hear me now, Louie? Yeah, maybe we have a cell signal issue here with Louie. Now can you hear me? All right. Well, why don't I tell you about There we go. And we've officially lost Louis. So what we do here is we pivot, and I tell you why I like shopping with McConnell Automotive. And that's because they have a huge selection of new and pre-owned vehicles. And right now, some great deals that they carried over from the month of September, where you can get some fantastic rebates on some of their new vehicles. And they've got some hot stuff coming out here. I know you're seeing the 2021 models begin to get rolled out, and the new 2021 Yukon, which... when last I talked with Louis, he said they'd still had some of those available. Those are really, really awesome looking. They're good now. And, now we have Louis on. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good morning. I don't know what happened.
I was telling everyone about your great rebates and the new Yukon that everyone loves so much.
That's right. I mean, we got a whole truckload of them in. I got to take one out of a little St. Paul's golf tournament today. We're going to have one out there for the hole-in-one prize. So hopefully somebody gets a hole-in-one and wins it. But yeah, we've got five or six of them there now. We got some more coming in, be in next week. Got that $6,000 rebates on all the new trucks, and don't forget about the used cars. We can check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. If you got any questions, give Gene or I a call at 251-476-4141.
All right, thanks, Louis.
Thank you.
That is Louis Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
I don't know if Louis got his money's worth on that one, but I think McConnell got his money's worth on that one. That was something else. It was Can't Miss Radio. More Can't Miss Radio at 8:38 on FM Talk 106.5 with Rob Hulbert from Lanyap Mobile. And Rob, good morning to you.
Those kind of things never used to happen in the old landline days, guys.
I'm putting this one squarely on Louis.
Yeah.
You know, even if it is our fault.
You think it's Louis' fault? I like to blame the
board.
Phone systems in general.
but with that in mind, we didn't have
5G.
A problem. We didn't have a problem with texting and driving during back into the stagecoach era. So we don't want to just go backwards, do we?
It's probably somebody burned down a 5G tower earlier today.
That's most likely what happened. Well, Lanyap Mobile, the newest issue out now, and of course, there's some talk about hurricanes, partially because we're still discussing Hurricane Sally and the destruction left behind from that, but also for a while there at the beginning of the week, we were wondering whether Hurricane Delta would be heading towards our area, and you wrote about that a little bit in this week's Damn the Torpedoes.
Yeah, I did. It's it's one of those things. I'm still not going to count us out of the woods yet. You know, these things are squirrely, but I've exposed myself a little bit to my own thought processes that my own preparedness is actually what causes hurricanes to come here or not. But and then also just the concept that, you know, if we can wish them on somebody else, mm-hmm. then, you know, if as a community we struggle hard enough and wish hard enough, it'll go somewhere else. I think that's really what it shows.
You know, I've tried to absolve myself from that guilt earlier, Rob, when I said, if you're listening online in Louisiana, look, as far as I'm concerned, I wish it would hit Sicily. But it doesn't look like Sicily's in play. So
yeah,
we do want it not to hit us, but it is kind of strange. And even areas where we know people that live there, you know, we know the communities, and we're still like, man, better them than us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. It is. It's one of those things that you just kind of like, well, you know, better them than us, and we'll send some water.
I do get the sense now, as people began to prepare for the possible arrival of Hurricane Delta in our area, I think because of Hurricane Sally, and before Hurricane Sally, I get the feeling that we as a community kind of got lax in our preparation for hurricanes, and that if we weren't inside the cone that was put out there by meteorologists, then we felt fairly safe and secure. Sally seemed to have changed that, and I saw early this week a lot more people, you know, preparing, filling up sandbags and things of that nature, even though we were already moving on to the outside of this cone. But that's kind of the sense I get, that Sally, in a way, rewoke us to the dangers from the Gulf. Do you get that same kind of feeling?
Well, I mean, I definitely went and bought more wine immediately this week. And last week, after thinking this was over, I let the kids tear the sandbags apart and play with them. So that we just we sort of just said, oh, it's over, it's all over,
mm-hmm.
and put the boat back in the slip and everything, and like, all right, well, it's over. And then I was up at 5 yesterday morning getting the boat back out of the slip.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think you're right. It's we've gone a long time without a quote unquote direct hit, and it's been, you know, I'm sure we've kind of gotten a little bit lax, and we've got a lot of, we also think we probably have a lot of dead trees. There's a lot of dead limbs and things like that. That's one of the things that hurricanes do, is shake all that stuff down, and so it's we caught a lot of damage because of it.
Yeah, no, we don't have to revisit Sally all over again, but the fact is that since Sally, and it was kind of a sneak attack in a way with what the forecasters were saying and the way it moved and on and on and on, but we've still got so much cleanup work to do, especially in Baldwin County. But I was reminded by some friends in Mobile County that we were not completely spared, and there are trees and there's lumber all over the place. It ain't pretty. So we've got a lot to occupy our mind and our muscles right now anyway.
Yeah, there's still a lot of cleanup to do, and you know, I mean, it is. I joke a lot about it, but it's, you know, we obviously don't want it here, but we don't want it to hit anywhere. It would be nice if it would just go away, but you know, unless we can nuke the hurricane, I don't think we can get rid of them. It's just hopefully it'll be a minor hurricane. Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a lot smaller than they had anticipated.
Well, you and your guys and girls at Lanyap have done a fantastic job after Sally, publishing stories and a lot of personal stories about what people went through and still what the cleanup effort entails. I know Gabe Tynes wrote about Mediacom still working on getting internet and phones, cable and internet back up to a lot of people in Baldwin County. But Governor Ivey, earlier this week, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, she issued the mandatory evacuation order.
2 days ago.
And that was notable because before Hurricane Sally, reportedly, the governor's office was asked to issue a mandatory evacuation order and failed to do so for Hurricane Sally. We saw the destruction from that storm. They get ahead of it early this week, and now that it right now appears the storm will be heading much farther westward from our area. We had people asking earlier this morning, will the governor now lift the evacuation order? Because this is doing, believe it or not, even more damage to the tourism industry down at the beach. I'm just, I don't know if you have any insight into how, like, an evacuation order would get lifted after it's placed, but what are your overall thoughts on the governor deciding this time to have an evacuation order, but not prior to Hurricane Sally?
Well, you know, the scuttlebutt behind the scenes was that there's friction, you know, that the governor's office didn't want to do it or didn't react to the previous requests because, you know, it was a retaliation for the Sheriff Hossmack not enforcing her ordinances, you know, her mask ordinances and things like that. And so whether that's true or not, I don't know. You know, there's if you read Jeff Poore's column this week, he has some really interesting information about the governor's office and the way they kind of keep track of people who don't do what they want them to do. I don't know. It is odd. I thought it was a little premature, honestly, but to issue a, you know, state of emergency when the thing was still out and not even, you know, not even into the Gulf yet. But you know, I would assume she could just lift it when she feels more comfortable with it, but I guess once you've done it, the concept of lifting it and then it makes some huge eastward turn and you look really stupid then, and you know, but it is odd that they wouldn't do it last time and they did this time. They said it was too late last time, so they decided to do it early this time. But you know, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation, because it, you know, if you don't do it and people don't leave and it comes there, you look really bad. If you do it too early and it doesn't come there, then you look bad too. So the only way you look good is if it comes in, you got everybody out of there early and it comes there.
Right. Well, I want to get off the hurricane talk a little bit. And can you stick with us through this next segment?
Absolutely.
Because the cover for Lanyap this week certainly piqued my interest.
Oh, yeah.
Bring back Bayfest.
Yeah.
Could Bayfest be back in Mobile, and who is calling for Bayfest to come back to Mobile? Got to talk with Rob about that one.
Okay. Also, that story from Bila Battery, housing situation down there, the public housing, mind-blowing story. And, Rob, I haven't read Jeff's column yet, but I would bet you it doesn't mince many words, huh?
Typically not, no.
He's something else. 846 FM Talk, 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. The show is Mobile Mornings. Jeff Poore is on the way starting at 9 o'clock. FM Talk 106.5, final segment of today's Mobile Mornings. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig at 8:51. along with Rob Hobart from Lanyap.
You put some...
like I'm in Northern Ireland.
Lanyap. Oh, yeah. You just had an accent.
What happened there? I don't know what happened. My tongue got caught with... I've got all kinds of... I've got way too much activity in my mouth. So it's Lanyap and also online Lanyap Mobile. Oh. I could have a team of dentists just take an hour to study my x-rays.
Dan,
I don't know what to make of that.
If you had misspoken like that at a vice presidential or presidential debate, they would be raking you over the coals.
Yes,
right now.
Exactly.
He has dementia. Yeah. He's near death.
Yeah. Well, they might be right on every account. So Rob, going to get back to some things now real quick with you.
Yeah, and first off, before we get into the outstanding Bayfest news, which 13-year-old Dalton is very excited to hear, how can people get the latest issue of Lanyap, or even better, subscribe online?
Well, we're, you know, of course, you can look for our boxes all over the Mobile and Baldwin area, you know, in grocery stores and some of the larger areas. And then, of course, go online at lanyapmobile.com. You can get signed up. It's 21 cents a day. You know, it's $1.50 a week. The press register is going to start asking you for $1.90 something a week very soon. They're already asking for it. So, we're, you know, go for the cheaper and better option.
Amen. And
that's all I'm saying.
And on the cover of this week's issue, just kind of teased it a minute ago, but Bayfest getting the cover story treatment. What's going on here? Is someone actually trying to revive the music festival?
Yeah, there's a lot of Bayfest nostalgia going on this year, and I guess maybe because the weather's so nice, and it's just a lot of people looking back and saying, gosh, we're, you know, this is really the time. Last weekend was really the weekend we would have normally had Bayfest. And Fred Richardson, you know, who is running for mayor, has said one of his planks in his platform would be that he wants to bring back Bayfest, and so we're looking at it, just looking back at Bayfest in general, what happened to it, and you know, the discussions about going forward, what kind of music festivals might the city have? You know, the mayor has concepts of smaller festivals throughout the year versus one great big festival. You know, you look back at the era of the city center the festivals around the country, and most of them have gone away.
Yeah.
And a lot of them ran into the same kinds of problems. You know, Bayfest, if you consider the fact that BP gave Bayfest almost $4 million, Bayfest probably would have run out of money a lot sooner if it wasn't for that.
Mm.
You know, they went through basically... You know, they went, I think, about 17 years without that kind of input of money, and they got $4 million, and they lasted two more years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't even know if they lasted two more years. I think they lasted a year and then started into another year.
It was like a year and a promotional cycle where we thought Bayfest was going to happen.
Yeah, a promotional cycle and went away. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of money went away very, very quickly. So, you know, I think a lot of things that, you know, for me personally as a journalist, what left a bad taste in my mouth was there's never any real accounting of what happened with Bayfest after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever came back and opened the books up and said, here's where money went, this is what we did. It just kind of went away, and we've never been able to get anybody from Bayfest to talk on the record about what occurred. And, you know, so that to me, I look at it and say, bring back Bayfest. I loved Bayfest, and Bayfest for Lanyap was the biggest paper of the year every single year. So from a financial standpoint, we lost a lot personally. But I think from the community standpoint, we have to look at it and say, you know, we need, whatever we do, it needs to be more accountable. And it needs to be, you know, if there's going to be public money involved in it in any way, it needs to be something where people can see it.
Amen.
Yeah, and I don't know how many years... Bayfest and the Hangout Fest, I know they weren't on the same weekend or even in the same month, but I'm not sure how many years they kind of overlapped with each other as far as, because I know Hangout Fest started much, much later than Bayfest, but it's an interesting thing, especially to bring up this year where there are like no musical artists doing anything right now.
Yeah.
In this year of COVID-19, I wonder if if they were to try to revive Bayfest, if it would be the same people involved, or whether they would try to get a whole new company involved in this. It's interesting to me, and I'd like to hear out the argument for why and how to responsibly bring it back. But yeah, to me, I think there were a lot of people left with a sour taste in their mouth from
Bayfest. Yeah, I think you're going to look at, you know, in the story, the folks put on 1065, they're still talking about bringing it back. You know, that may be sort of the genesis of a new festival, I think. But it's a hard concept, and you know, people complained about Bayfest, you know, when the tickets went up to, you know, $40-something, you know, and it's, God, I've got 3 days worth of music and hundreds of acts I can see for $40-something. But, you know, it costs you $500 to go see the hangout. And yeah. People just, you know, I always heard these, a lot of complaints from people. And, you know, and the other part about it, is the city was just awash in free tickets. I mean, it was, there were just people giving away tickets. There were, you know, council people, there were just tickets available for everybody. A lot of folks didn't pay to go to Bayfest, I don't think. And so, you know, I don't know if it was really a tightly run program sometimes.
Yeah, I think before you bring back a new Bayfest, Rob, we have to figure out what happened to that Bayfest.
Right.
Is that fair enough?
I think you have to, honestly. I think you've got to look at it and do a real triage on what occurred, you know, and say, why did it happen? How did you go through, how did it survive for 17 years without a massive influx of money? And then when it got almost $4 million, it died. How did that happen? You know, it's kind of amazing.
I wish we had time to get into my favorite story that you guys have been covering over the last few weeks, the Bayou LaBattery Housing Board. Unfortunately, we don't, but folks can find out the latest on that by picking up the latest issue of Lanyap, right, Rob?
Yep, you can. It's hot. It's a good story, man. Keep up with it. It's fascinating stuff. So, you can pick up the paper or sign up online and check it out. It's a very interesting story. We're on it.
Hey, man, I got to visit you in your new digs on, relatively new, Government Street, of course.
Yes, they're down there right across from the library.
Yeah, I just invited myself. How about that?
Well, come on down. You guys should come do the show one morning from there. That'd be nice.
That'd be outstanding. Thank you, Rob.
All right, guys.
Rob Holber with I was going to say Bayfest. Rob would say, wait a minute, I'm not with Bayfest.
No.
Don't drag me into that.
He's with Lanyap.
Yes.
And one of the articles you can read in the latest Lanyap from our very own Jeff Bohr. He's on the way next. Guests today, Alabama Daily News' Todd Stacey, State Senator Tom Butler, U.S. Representative Mike Rogers, State Rep Wes Allen, and Josh Moon from the Alabama Political Reporter. Don't want to miss it. It starts here in just a few minutes.
Jeff is my dude, man. I love Jeff Bohr. And check out his article in Lanyap, too, and at yellowhammernews.com.